It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. As we were just saying before we started recording, we have an awful lot to talk about. We will start with starting pitchers, and we will start with what is probably the biggest news in baseball over the past couple of days. Noah Syndergaard dealing with some more elbow discomfort. The Mets appear to have cleared him, said there's not really a problem. With that said, this is the second time this year he has had some elbow discomfort and gone to see a doctor about it. And one of the things we see more and more, I believe Joe Sheehan did some research on this, and he's not the only one. I think it was probably also in Jeff Passan's book, is that guys who throw really, really hard, it's one of the surest signs of eventual elbow problems. So, without saying we think Syndergaard's going to have a major elbow issue this year, this is twice now, and I feel like it does kind of change the way you look at him. Is this a guy you're either looking to deal now while he is pitching as well as nearly anybody in the game and you're worried, or is this somebody that you're looking to maybe take advantage of a worried owner of Syndergaard?
Yeah, well, it probably depends where you are in your standings, or at least where you are in your pitching categories. And I would say, if I own Syndergaard and, you know, I needed to move up in the standings, I think you have to own him the rest of the season and just ride this out and hope that, you know, that he doesn't end up having a serious elbow issue or arm issue this season. If I own Syndergaard and I was at the top of my pitching standings, maybe I would like to trade him away now for the security of someone who's good but not as good but quite, at least for now, quite safe. And then similarly, you know, if I was another owner, didn't own Syndergaard, and I needed to make a splash, you know, maybe you try to buy low a little bit on him right now and cross your fingers and hope you get another 15 or so starts, 17 starts from him, and he can move you up in a category. But there'll be a lot of teams with Syndergaard who are at or near the top of their league with the way he's pitched so far this season. So this is going to have a major impact in a lot of leagues.
If you're looking for that more secure option, who's somebody you'd be looking for? Who's a kind of fair, slight step down in value and step up in security?
Yeah, we always go back to John Lester because he's my prototypical, like, high upside number two starter. And so, you know, that's where my mind automatically goes to as far as Lester's. You know, he's on pace to win about 20 games, and that seems pretty reasonable on a Cubs team that's winning so much this year. And he's going to have solid ratios. You know, he's not quite Syndergaard good. Maybe Corey Kluber is another one who's kind of a low-end ace this year, but still very good. Matthew, if you were a Syndergaard owner, would you be willing to trade him for either of those pitchers?
I definitely couldn't do it for Lester. I couldn't pull the trigger on that. I don't think I could do it in either of those. I mean, I think that the potential upside on Kluber is higher, but I would have a hard time doing that. I just have a hard time parting with him, and that's sort of the problem. Is I don't. That's why I asked the question. Is I don't know who that person is. Like, I sort of feel like, you know, an interesting name to me and a guy whose overall numbers aren't that good, so you could probably get this done. I'd sooner deal him for price than either of those guys, for example. Is that something that would make sense to you?
Yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, when I thought about it, I mean, you can forget about all the Scherzers, Sales, Bumgarners. Those pitchers are too good. You know, they're kind of on par with a healthy Syndergaard. Maybe he's been better than some of them and not quite as good as some so far this year, but there, I feel like he's kind of in their tier when he's healthy. So to me, you have to go down to that next tier. And yeah, for sure, Price is in that next tier. Kluber, I think Lester is, just because the Cubs are so good and he's winning so many games with them. But then you get into a little personal preference just amongst that low-end ace, high-end number two pitcher. And I think that's where we probably would look with Syndergaard right now, kind of dropping down one tier, because there's actually, you know, officially there's nothing really wrong with him. He's probably going to make his next start. But that's probably where you want to go. And like I said in the beginning, it probably depends on where you are in your standings and what kind of splash you need from that pitcher spot from the rest of the season.
You mentioned that Marcus Stroman is a guy who is getting a ton of talk, and I got to be honest, I don't feel very good about Stroman right now, and part of why I don't feel good about him, something you've touched on, we talked about Smiley, for example, is that the upside on Stroman in fantasy is not as high as some of these guys because he's not a real high strikeout guy. So when people come to you with these questions about Stroman, I mean, it's kind of hard to say hang in there, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. And, yeah, those are the questions we're getting on Twitter, questions, you know, should I drop Stroman for James Paxton or, you know, pitchers like that who have kind of come on the scene in the last few weeks and have pitched well. And it's hard to say no right now because, as you mentioned, I come back to, you know, what are we going to get from Stroman if or when he gets back on track? And I do think he'll get back on track to some degree, but pitching in the AL East, it's hard to envision him getting on track to the point where he's like a major positive impact on your ratios. And then his strikeout rate's been so low, he's not going to be a big help in that area except during two start weeks. So then he needs to win a lot of games, and that could happen, but you know, that's a competitive division. I'm not sure that it will happen. So I just don't know in a shallow league. I mean, in a 15-team league, you have to ride this out with him on your bench. But in a 10-team league, I'm inclined to cut him because I just don't think there'll be a month later this season where he does so well that you'll really regret it.
Do you feel better about him or Chris Archer from here to the end of the year?
I'm going to say Archer just because of the upside with the strikeouts. Just if either one can get back to the point where his ratios are respectable, then to me Archer has more upside with the strikeouts. I think I feel it's a little more likely that Stroman gets back on track than Archer, but the upside of Archer is so tantalizing that I'd rather take the risk. Going back to, you know, when someone says, should I drop Archer for Paxton? Drop Stroman for Paxton. It's almost not about it's not about Paxton, really. It's about moving on from Stroman. And, I mean, if Paxton turns out, that's great. And if he doesn't, then in 2 weeks you drop him for someone else. That's really the big decision is, are you moving on from Stroman?
Right. And that's kind of, you know, you kind of hit at why I asked the question about Archer, because I agree that the upside is higher. But, you know, it's been a distressingly long time since Chris Archer was really good. It was basically the first half of last year. He limped down the stretch in the second half of last year, and he's had flashes this year, but hasn't really had a stretch where he was consistently good since the first half of last year. So I think that's the kind of question is I agree. I think I agree with exactly how you do the math there. I have a little more confidence in Stroman to get back. I'm worried about Archer at this point, and I'm a huge fan of the guy. But the flip side of that is what you get if Archer does come back is a more compelling pitcher. I think there's kind of an interesting question there.
Yeah, I would be really afraid if I dropped Archer of him having like a 45 or 50 strikeout month where he just goes off and then I really regret it. I also think there's probably enough value in Archer, like from going back to March, where you can probably still trade him for someone you'd prefer over your option on waivers, whereas like Archer was in that low-end ace, high-end number two in a mixed league, whereas Stroman in a mixed league was kind of more 3-4.
Yep.
So when he bottoms out, I don't know that there's going to be a lot of market for him for trading.
Yeah, that makes sense. We have now three straight good starts for Michael Wacha against good teams. I mean, the Pirates are not a bashing team, but they're a good team. I believe Texas and the Cubs were the other two. That's pretty encouraging. Are your fears about Wacha assuaged at this point?
Yeah, assuaged enough that I would, if he was dropped in a really shallow league, I'd want to pick him up. I think if there's a buy low window, it's almost closed, if not completely closed now. So, you know, for those who are patient with him. And I worry a little bit about him with the upside. His strikeout rate's not great either, but it's a little better than someone like Stroman. So, you know, if I owned Wacha and held on to him through this, you know, I want him back in my lineup now, and I think I'm done being worried. Are you done being worried?
I am. Unfortunately, I didn't have him started for the Cubs game. I just thought, you know, boy,
Yeah, it's always though.
Have to start him next time because I can't live with twice in a row of having him on the bench for good starts. So it almost doesn't matter. He's starting for me next start.
Yeah, and that's the most frustrating thing sometimes in fantasy baseball where, you know, if his next start isn't good and then you miss the good one and you got the bad one. But you know, I totally get not starting him against the Cubs, and I always think you're better to be safe and miss a good start than to be risky and hit on a bad start that you saw coming. So, you know, I think that was sensible.
If there is a guy that the buy low is still there, the question is, do you want it? Because you'd still be buying low. Shelby Miller had a good start his last time out, and he's definitely not strung enough of them together in a row that that opportunity is passed. Are you trying to get in on Shelby Miller?
The start was against the Phillies, which makes me still fairly skeptical, but it is nice timing with, you know, the disabled list in and maybe a bit of a mental break. I would say 12-team league or deeper, I would pick him up if he was dropped. 10-team league would probably just depend on my bench space. Like, I don't think he's going back into my active lineup yet, but if I had bench space, he probably has more upside than the other pitchers on waivers in my league. So I would, you know, I guess looking at it that way, bench space, but I wouldn't put him back in my lineup until I saw him have at least one good start against a better lineup than the Phillies are putting out there.
That's completely fair. Finally, time to say that Trevor Bauer is for real?
Huh. I don't know. He's teased us before. Maybe. I think all I can give, even after looking at all the numbers, it's still Trevor Bauer, so I'm still kind of stuck on maybe. Like, are you all in this time? I think you have a little more faith in Bauer overall, dating back to before the season started, than I do. Do you feel like he's over the hump now?
I just like that upside so much that he's at least entered the category of I'm willing to take the pain of when it goes wrong at this point because he is so exciting. Now, I would note, you look at these four starts and who he's done it against. The Rays do not hit. The White Sox, since about the beginning of May, do not hit. At the Angels, friendly ballpark, and they don't hit. At the Mariners, that's a good offense, but a friendly ballpark. He's got a string of four really good starts, but they're all pretty friendly circumstances. So that would be the one thing I would be a little hesitant on. But even so, over those four starts, that's 42 strikeouts and six walks. So if you sort of adjust for degree of difficulty, that's still pretty good.
No, it is. And, I mean, we can always buy into the point where we're just going to jump off a little faster if he regresses than we would with someone who we trust a little more. So, I mean, if I was a Bauer, I'll say I bought into the point where if I was a Bauer owner, I would not be looking to sell high. And if I was looking to maybe pick up, in some of my leagues lately, I've thought about picking up some pitchers who are pitching well recently but don't have a long track record because you're going to pay less for them than the ones who have a long track record of success, and then just crossing my fingers that they keep it up. And he would be on my list of that type of pitcher where I have enough reason to believe in him and there's enough upside, especially with the Indians playing really well, that you know, he might be a nice trade target. It's hard to think about buying high, but he still doesn't have that long track record. You're still going to pay less for him, you know, than those John Lester types that are pitching well and have pitched well for a long time.
I am a basically permanent Francisco Liriano skeptic. Those walk rates just always scare me, even when he's hard to hit. He now leads the league in walks allowed. He's allowed 14 homers in 78 innings. Are you holding on to him in any format at this point?
No, and I'm probably one of his biggest. I am one of his biggest skeptics for sure. I just have always felt like he's a little overrated in fantasy because the whip's always high, and even when he's pitching well, the ERA's low and the whip's high. He doesn't go deep into games, and the strikeout rate is really good, but the total amount of strikeouts is good but not great because he doesn't work deep into games, and that can affect your win total. And I just have always felt like he's been overvalued in our game, and it just isn't reliable. So I haven't owned him, I don't think, ever, or at least not in years, in any leagues, and I'm not jumping in now. I would feel pretty comfortable dropping him in most mixed leagues. Would you feel the same way?
Absolutely. I'm not, like I said, I'm not really a big fan, and I always feel like guys like that who are effective despite walking a lot of guys, I always feel like that line is so fine. You only have to have that control go a little bit before you're just looking at sheer disaster, and I feel like that's what we're seeing right now.
Yeah, going back early in our conversation, I think I would actually keep Stroman over him just because I think there's a better chance that he turns it around. Even though I think that the upside's lower, at least I just think there's a chance that Stroman gets back on track and is usable.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. In fact, I wouldn't even find that a particularly hard call, even given the difference in leagues.
Yeah, I think their average draft position going back to March was pretty similar. But Stroman at least had a nice stretch this year, and then has kind of really fallen apart in the last month,
right.
Whereas Liriano really hasn't all year gotten on track.
That's a big difference to me. We move on to the hitters. We've talked about it a couple times, but we've now got a fairly extended stretch of Justin Upton being pretty good, pretty close to a point where you're paying pretty close to full value if you want to pick up Justin Upton.
Yeah, I think the buy low window might be still open a little bit just because his season numbers are pretty depressed. You know, thinking back to the fact that he was probably about a fourth round pick in a lot of leagues this year, I think you could still get him for less than that. But yeah, we've come back to the point where, you know, you're not going to pick him up really, really cheap. Nobody's hitting us up on Twitter chats anymore saying, you know, should I drop Justin Upton? Should I bench Justin Upton? And I mean, this is Upton. I mean, his cold spell this year came at the very beginning of the year, but he is prone to cold spells, you know, in most seasons. That kind of seems to be his MO. He's also prone to a hot spell in most seasons, and maybe we're starting into one right now.
Staying in the Tigers outfield, Steven Moya, power source so far, 3 homers in 14 games. I look at those minor league numbers, and I am willing to be the guy who misses out on him and let somebody else catch that lightning in a bottle. Do you like him more than I do?
I'd say maybe just a little more, just in the sense of if he fit a need for me. You know, if I was a J.D. Martinez owner in a 15-team league, then I think Moya is the kind of guy that I would look at. In a couple of my 15-team leagues, I picked up Ezekiel Carrera instead of Moya on the weekend, but Moya was kind of my next contingency bid, just in the sense of, you know, I was hoping for, you know, one or two homers a week from him through to the All-Star break and maybe beyond. So in a 10-team league, I'll pass. In a 12-team league, I'll probably pass. But if I needed some power in a deeper mixed league, then I would take a look.
I think that's fair. The Nationals are doing something that, when it happens in fantasy football, everybody screams. You're not crazy about Michael Taylor if he's playing every day. You're not crazy about Ben Revere if he's playing every day. But either guy, if he's playing every day, is somebody you probably want to have. Instead, it looks like they are now platooning. Do you want either of those guys at this point in anything other than an NL-only league?
I'd say deep mixed, I would want to own Revere just in case he gets that full-time job back. I wouldn't want either of them in my starting lineup. I don't think I would want Taylor in a mixed league at all. I just don't see him maybe getting the full share of that job. And then even if he does, I know both you and I aren't really high on him as a player overall. Revere does have that potential at some point, if he gets full-time role back, to have the 8 or 9 steal month. So for that reason, if I needed steals, I wouldn't mind having him on my bench in a deep mixed league. I think in a 10-team league, though, it's probably a good idea to send him to waivers. Like, there's probably someone on waivers who has enough upside that you'd rather have them.
One thing I would throw, just to play devil's advocate, and as you noted, I'm not a big fan of Taylor as a player at this point, but Dusty Baker clearly loves him and really wants him to be somebody who wins a big portion of the playing time. Can you see a case for, not in a 10-team mix, obviously, but in a deeper league, can you see a case to pick up Taylor speculatively, hold him on your bench? Because I think if Taylor gets hot, there is a chance for him. He's a guy who could hit for some power, could steal some bases. Can you see a case for picking him up in case he plays his way into that role with the thought that if he is good, he could play his way into a regular role?
Yeah, no, that's possible. I will also, as my mind started to think about all the different options with this scenario, with what Revere is making this year, and he has a pretty long track record as a high average leadoff hitter, you know, if they do start to just swing it even more towards Taylor at some point, is there any chance that Revere gets traded in July? And then if he gets traded, he would get traded then probably to a contending team that wanted him at the top of their lineup. That would really drive Revere's value and Taylor's value way up. It's hard to see. You don't usually see contending teams like the Nats, you know, trade away veterans but to other contenders. But you never know. Like, that's a scenario that could happen where maybe Washington makes a massive upgrade at center field and in the process they get rid of Revere or gets rid of Revere and then uses that salary space to make an upgrade at a different position. I'm not sure. but I guess it's possible.
Yeah, I think it's unlikely, but I wouldn't rule it out. I do think that's a creative front office, and I wouldn't put much past them. Wilson Contreras comes in, hits pretty well right off the bat. Cubs prospects, in a lot of cases, have arrived in the majors pretty ready to hit. Not in every case, but in a lot of cases, they look ready when they get here. The Cubs certainly don't look to be tied to making sure Miguel Montero gets a lot of plate appearances. I think they're happy to move on from him if Contreras gives them the opportunity. And although minor, it appears that, or he did, Montero picked up an injury yesterday. It sounds like they're not a real concern, but he came out of the game. All of this adds up to a guy I find pretty compelling. Is Contreras pretty much a must-own right now?
Yeah, I felt, as a young player, I feel like he is a must-own. When he initially got called up and the Cubs said they're carrying three catchers, I thought, well, he's not going to have the volume of work to factor into mixed leagues. I still don't know if he'll get the volume to factor into one-catcher leagues. He might. Like, if he can start 3 out of 5 games, I think that's good enough with a good bat and the way the catcher position is this year to factor into one catcher leagues. I kind of felt when he came up like it was going to be maybe even temporary, get him a few games, he goes back to the minors for a while, and then he's up in September when they can better afford to carry three catchers for a long time. And I still feel like that's possible, but because the Cubs' lineup's been so good that they're probably going to cruise to the top of that division, you know, all the way through. But, you know, he's hitting so well right out of the gate, and then Montero's kind of dinged up. You know, maybe he does just run with the job. I just can't see a team like the Cubs that's for sure going to be competing in October just casting aside a veteran like Montero, even though he hasn't hit well this season.
Yeah, but the flip side is I think the Cubs in particular have shown that willingness to play the better player, even if the better player is a younger player. So one thing I noted about Contreras, and look, his minor league record is sort of all over the place in some ways. He's done different things at different levels, but this year in AAA in 54 games, he hit .350. Last year at AA in 126 games, he hit .333. I have a particular bias towards catchers who can hit for average because it seems like the prototype productive catcher is a Wieters type, a Darnot type, a guy who's going to hit .250 and get you some power. And the idea of a catcher who could hit .300, a catcher who can be productive, get you some RBI, and not hurt your batting average is really compelling to me.
Yeah, no, definitely. I also think that what will drive Contreras' playing time is actually probably going to be word of mouth among the Cubs pitching staff, because that's a pitching staff that's been really, really good this year, and there's no way they're going to mess with that. I think they've shown with Lester, you know, with having Ross catch him and making that happen, that, you know, they want their pitchers in a comfort zone. So, you know, I think the amount of workload Contreras gets may come back to conversations with Arrieta, you know, Hendricks, Hamill, and talking to them about, okay, how much do you like throwing to Montero? How important is that to you? Are you willing to try this kid to get his bat in the lineup on your days? Because we all know they also like run support. So that may drive a lot of his value. My initial thinking was that a lot of those Cubs pitchers, because they're having such good seasons, would want to stick with what's working. But you never know. Maybe, you know, Contreras catches some bullpen sessions and they say, you know what, I'm comfortable with him.
Yeah. I think generally I have a lot of faith in the Cubs' sort of decision-making process and how they will do this. I think they're smart enough and everybody's on the same page enough that if they want him to be the guy, they'll find a way to make that work. One topic on here that I think is exactly the right time to be asking, Mark Trumbo is still absolutely torrid. I think he's got 21 home runs, but he is a guy, I don't think this was the case last year, but a guy for a lot of his career has sort of been a one-half hitter and in particular a first-half hitter. As a guy who owns Trumbo, I am currently at the point of trying to decide whether to sell high. I am leaning towards that's a really compelling idea. What would you advise? Do you think it's time to try and cash in Trumbo before the second-half swoon that you sometimes see comes from him?
Yeah, I mean, this is a great environment for him in Baltimore, but at the same time, you know, with the way he's a bit of a one-dimensional hitter, like if his power numbers just go back to being, like, good and not great, then he's not, like, super valuable anymore. How about this, going back a few minutes in our conversation, how would you feel about Trumbo and Justin Upton?
Be a really interesting... Yeah, I mean, it's funny because that's a trade that gets you laughed out of your league on April 1st, and yet I don't know what I'd be looking for Trumbo, but I'm not sure I like Upton enough.
I think you can get Upton plus. I think you're right. You're right. The Upton owner laughs at that offer on April 1st. The Trumbo owner laughs at that offer on June 1st. And now they're starting to come back closer, and I think you could probably get Upton plus another player that you could use. You know, if someone wanted to pick up a closer, I think you could maybe even get Upton plus a closer for him or something like that. There are going to be owners in every league who are near the bottom of the home runs category and look at his home run total and say, well, this is the guy. Like, they're not going to pay for the Paul Goldschmidts and the Mike Trouts. So they're like, hey, Trumbo's the guy to get me back in the race in home runs, and I think you could get a lot for him right now.
And that's the kind of deal that you give me another piece that I can actually use, and now we're talking about something that is definitely interesting. Ajay Davis, active in all leagues?
I think he has to be. There's just so few steals to go around this season, and, you know, it goes back to the Billy Hamilton debate that people have all the time when he's going right and he's stealing so many bases. Not that Davis is at that level, but there's so few people, like players with even 10 steals this year or 15 steals, and he's over 20. I think he has to be active in all leagues. If someone owns him and they don't need him, there probably is someone else in your league that does.
That's a good point. We move to the closers, and something that I've started sort of looking for some value with the Cardinals. If you have Rosenthal at this point, he's been really steady for a long time, but there seems to be some discontent there. And it seems to be, for some reason, not just about the last couple of weeks. If you have Rosenthal, do you have to have that hedge right now?
Yeah, I think you have to have O on your roster right now if you have Rosenthal, if you can, if he's not already gone in your league. And Rosenthal is someone I'm worried about because I feel like he's walked that tightrope now for more than this season. Like, his whip is consistently high, like high to a point that we don't like to see for secure closers. And I know the Cardinals have been really stuck with him and said that you know, they're not going to back off and he's their guy and everything, but they're a smart organization. They can see the whip just like we can. I don't know. Then there's so many good options in that bullpen. He's the closer, among the closers who have quote-unquote secure jobs right now, he's the one I'm most worried about.
And the thing is, not only are they smart, they're aggressive. I mean, you see what they've done with Colton Wong. They're decisive. That's an organization that once makes a decision is willing to do it and stick with it. I don't think they're going to just stick with something just because. I think that they are willing to make bold, decisive moves. And so if they decide that Rosenthal is not the guy, I don't think they're going to say, well, we've won a lot with him. I think they're going to say, he's not the guy.
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't know. I think all Rosenthal owners can do right now is just cross their fingers and hope that he has some clean innings. I don't think you'd get enough for him to make it worth trading him. Unless you find, if there's another team that's already picked up, if you can trade him to that team and say, well, there you go, you have the Cardinals closer situation covered either way, because I do think that's the direction they would probably go. Other than that, though, I think Rosenthal owners, you just have to cross your fingers right now, which isn't a good place to be, but it's kind of where we are.
If you don't have him, are you speculatively picking up O?
Yeah, for sure. I tried to pick him up and sneak him through waivers in one of my leagues a couple weeks ago just for like a dollar, and somebody else was a little more into him than I was, and in hindsight, I wish I had paid a little more. Not that it'll necessarily happen, but I do think he's the guy. I don't think Kevin Segrist is the guy. He could be, but I feel like, his track record of closing overseas and then his numbers this year are just outstanding. Like, he hasn't shown any adjustment phase to coming to the majors. Like, I just feel like forget that he's a rookie. It just doesn't really matter. Like, in his baseball career, he's a veteran who's been through it and I think can handle the ninth inning if they need him.
I agree. And I also feel like there's some of the same sort of nervousness in Cardinal land about Segrist that there is about Rosenthal. I think that they would feel safer if they're going to make that change, go to O. I think that's much more likely. A guy that I've liked since the beginning of the year, really, Alex Colomé has been really, really good for the Rays, and Brad Boxberger is still not back yet. We asked this back in May, I think, and started talking about, you know, is there some chance that Colomé stays in the role when Boxberger comes back? I feel like every week that goes by and Colomé remains effective, that becomes more likely. or it becomes likely that as the Rays fall farther out of the race, when Boxberger comes back, one of those guys gets dealt. So do you like Colomates for 20 more saves the rest of the year?
Yeah, I kind of do. You're right that he could get traded, and that's almost my only fear right now. I was always quite hard and fast that when Boxberger came back, he would be the closer. When he was initially on the DL, I felt like 7 good weeks or so from Colomé wouldn't be enough to, you know, no matter how good they were, to take that closer role away from Boxberger. But now that it's a second DL stint, and, you know, this one could take him all the way up to the end of July or the middle of July, we don't really know yet. I know he's throwing again, but he's not close to coming back, and I think they could just say to, you know, Colomé's been perfect. He'll just keep the job. Boxberger, you know, some still maybe high leverage innings, but not the ninth inning, maybe a more reliable schedule when he first comes back. And then you'll see where they go from there. I would rather own Colomé right now, and I would have rather owned Boxberger when he first came back.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. You raise a really interesting question here, and it's more sort of a philosophical question than a specific, it's more a strategy question than a tactics question, and that's why I find it interesting. So there are, give or take, 90 games left in the season, 14 weeks, this is the 12th week out of 26, or 14 weeks left in the season. At this point, when a guy goes on the DL, and you're talking 15 games, you're talking a sixth of the season or more. You're talking bare minimum a sixth of the season. So how does that begin to affect how you evaluate those guys? Does it, as far as trading them to get something back, as far as trading for them, how much different is it trading for a guy at this point in the season when you're talking about 15 days being out than it is at the beginning of the year?
Yeah, I think owners have to get their head around that, because people tend to think of 15 days as 15 days, but 15 days in April isn't the same when you talk about keeping a player or trading for a player as 15 days now. You're right. It's almost double the impact that it was if somebody started the season on the disabled list. And now you start thinking about, and to me, it's not so much the 15 days, because you can cover the guys who are going to be out for a couple weeks, like maybe a Dexter Fowler right now, who I don't think they expect to be out for a really, really long time. But when you get those guys that are going to be out 4 weeks, 6 weeks or more, and then you start wondering, depending on league size and bench space, like, do you need to drop them, or do you need to get rid of them at a really low price? It's like, it's heartbreaking to see a good player, you know, a Jose Bautista, JD Martinez, go on the disabled list with a long timetable. But at the same time, sometimes getting rid of them might be the best thing to do. And I wouldn't say dropping those guys, but trading them at a discount.
Yeah, I started to say, who in that group, who are the kinds of guys that your evaluation of that might be different with an injury now as compared to April? I mean, for example, you mentioned Bautista, not really in that category. It sounds like they're not really worried about it. He's a guy with tremendous value. His injury doesn't really feel that much different. Who's a guy that would feel a lot different at this point?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of someone who's hurt right now. It would be someone maybe in that Fowler class if he had that 4 to 6 week injury. So it wouldn't be anyone who let's say this, if we were drafting today, it wouldn't be anyone who we would take if they were all healthy in the first 5, 6, 7 rounds. Once you get into those middle round guys, if they're going to miss a month to 6 weeks, depends on, you know, your DL space and everything else. But, I mean, there's enough superstars on the DL right now, Bautista, Martinez, Garrett Cole, Yu Darvish. Those guys are occupying the DL spot in leagues that have limited resources in that area. Those middle tier guys, I think, owners are going to have to make tough decisions on them if they suffer a long-term injury.
A guy that I was starting to be really intrigued by, Malik Smith, was really starting to turn his speed into base-stealing success. Was really starting to become a different kind of hitter, learn the strike zone, a guy that you break down a season. It was very intriguing the way he was starting to come around, but he's now going to be out for a good long time. I mean, if you have DL space, you DL him until somebody else comes along. But otherwise, you're not stashing him right now, are you?
Yeah, you have to let him go. He's even lower than, like, he to me is a no-brainer that you let him go, because he's a little lower than those mid-round guys. But you're right, he was helping because he was one of the few players stealing bases, and he was starting to hit well. Yeah, you have to just, you know, let him go, and it's just not worth keeping him unless you have an empty DL spot. It's not worth keeping him for the 1 month or maybe 6 weeks that you could get from him at the end of the year. He'll probably still be on waivers when he gets closer to his return date anyways, because other people won't have the room for him either. And then you can always pick him back up when he's a week or two away from coming back. Yeah, it's really tricky situations, and you do have to kind of do the math on it. In the Tout Wars League on the weekend, I traded the J.D. Martinez owner Joe Ross for Martinez, and that's the kind of discount. Like, Joe Ross for Martinez would be laughed at if you sent that offer before Martinez hurt his elbow, but now it's one that kind of made sense for both of us. And with the same owner last year, I traded him around the All-Star break, Cole Calhoun for Miguel Cabrera. Same kind of thing, you know, Cole Calhoun for Miguel Cabrera doesn't make any sense when they're both healthy, but last year, you know, Cabrera was out until the middle of August, so it kind of made sense for a team with depth to trade with a team without depth and make those trades, and that's where I think owners have to really do the math and see what they can absorb, and it depends what you have on the waiver wire in your league.
We move along to the two start pitchers, and I got to say it is not a group that fills me with excitement here. Robbie Ray, Eduardo Rodriguez, John Gray, Danny Duffy, Ivan Nova, Daniel Mengden, Blake Snell, and Colby Lewis. I see two guys on this list that I like, maybe three. Even as he continues to pitch well, I remain a Colby Lewis skeptic, but I wouldn't be surprised if you still like him, Yankees, Twins. Two guys that I like on this list are Snell at home against the Red Sox and Tigers. Those are tough matchups, but that's a good park, and I like the pitcher. I think the one that jumps out to me is Danny Duffy at home against the Cardinals, who are a good offense, but it's a pretty good ballpark. And then at Philly, I think that's the guy I like the most. Anybody you like more than that on that list?
I think those would be Snell and Duffy would be my two favorites. The Cardinals, I know what you mean with Duffy. The Cardinals worry me, although they've been better against right-handers than lefties so far this year, which isn't surprising when you look at the profiles, like career profiles of some of their better players. But the Phillies matchup is really enticing. Snell, I think you can't pass up with the upside. I mean, you know, especially if you've been if you're someone who was stashing him for a while, like he's here now, he's got a two-start week, I think you have to use him. I'll try Daniel Mengden, you know, like at the Giants and then at home to the Pirates, like two National League teams. I don't know if he'll be great, but he's been solid since he came up. You know, he's going to work at two pitcher-friendly parks. Like, to me, he's maybe, if you can be a safe option when you've had so little major league experience, but to me, maybe he's a bit of a safe option. I just don't see him necessarily getting rocked in either of those games. A lot of the other guys, I see that potential.
All right, well, that is the Fantasy 411 for this week. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Fred Zinke, for taking some time to talk.